Welcome to Torah Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we'll be learning Malachim Aleph, Perek Tet Zayin. This perek begins with a nevuah given to a Navi named Yehu ben Hanani to be delivered to Baasha, the king of Machlot Yisrael, that his dynasty will end due to his sins, just like Yeravam's dynasty was ended for the same reason. In fact, we see that Baasha's son Elah, who succeeded him to the throne after his death, was assassinated while in a drunken stupor only 2 years into his reign. His assassinator was a man named Zimri, a military officer of medium rank, who also killed all other members of Baasha's household to remove their royal threat to his newly established dynasty. This appears to be a pretty exact Mida Keneged Mida punishment for Baasha's assassination of Nadav ben Yeravam, who had also reigned after his father for only 2 years, and whose entire family was also killed in order for his assassinator to secure his throne. But how could Baasha be punished for killing Yeravam's son Nadav and his entire family if Hashem himself decreed that Yeravam's dynasty would be destroyed? If Baasha was just fulfilling Hashem's wish, why would he be punished for doing so? There are a number of different approaches amongst the Parshanim, and we'll discuss some of them today. Rashi suggests that since Baasha followed in Nadav ben Yeravam's evil ways, he had no right to kill him, meaning he would only have had a right to destroy Beit Yeravam if he would have reformed the kingdom. But once he didn't help reform the kingdom, what right did he have to destroy Beit Yeravam? The Ralbag suggests that since Baasha killed Nadav not because he worshipped Avodah Zarah, and not in order to fulfill Hashem's nevuah to Yeravam, but rather because he wanted to be king himself, therefore he was punished for what he did, because he didn't do it for the right reasons. A third approach can be compared to Sheba Mitzrayim and the Brit Bin Abtarim. Just as in the Brit Bin Abtarim, Hashem promised Avraham that his descendants would ultimately be enslaved and afflicted by a foreign nation, Be'eretz Lo Lahem, in a land that was not theirs, Hashem never specified in Brit Bin Abtarim who that nation would be. Exactly which land that would be is not named. It just says Be'eretz Lo Lahem, a land that was not theirs. And so Hashem decreed that it would happen, but didn't decree by whom it would happen. Same here, right? Hashem decreed that Yeravam's dynasty would end, but he did not decree who would do it. And therefore, whoever decides to fulfill Hashem's decree of murder or affliction is completely responsible for his actions, since it was he himself who decided to do it. So just as the Misrim were held responsible and culpable for their actions, even though Hashem had decreed it in advance, so too, Baasha was held responsible for his actions, even though Hashem had decreed it would happen in advance, because Hashem never said that he should be the one to do it. In other words, there's a chain of divine justice, but the person who meets out that justice is still morally responsible for what he does. So Zimri appointed himself as king, but his reign lasted for only 7 days. Because on the 7th day, the general of the army, whose name was Omri, with the people's support, besieged the capital city of Tirza. Thinking, you know, why should an officer of medium rank become king when I'm his general, right? He should be subservient to me. I should be the one with the power. And so Omri, with the help of the people, besieged the city of Tirza, and Zimri, scared that Omri was going to win, Zimri decided to burn down his palace with himself inside, which was essentially an act of suicide. Malchut Yisrael was then divided between Omri, this general who had just besieged Tirza, and Tivni. But Omri eventually won the throne based on popular demand. This popular support enabled Omri to expand his power. He switched the capital city of Malchut Yisrael to Shomron, and his reign was characterized by political stability, by military strength, and by peace and cooperation with Malchut Yehuda. Because of this, Omri's dynasty ultimately solved Malchut Yisrael's crisis, providing the political and economic stability they so desperately needed. However, spiritually, Omri and his son Ahav were even more evil than all of the others who came before them. They were considered even more evil than Yeravam himself. In fact, Ahav is described as having been so bad that compared to what he did, It was considered light to merely follow the sins of Yeravam. What was so bad about Ahav? We're told that he worshipped Baal, the rain god, and Asherah, the goddess of fertility, who was considered the female counterpart to the Baal and was often fashioned in the form of a tree or a pregnant or nursing woman. And we're told that Ahav even erected a temple to Baal in Shomron, his capital city. This was considered much worse than the sins of Yeravam ben Nevat, who introduced Avodat Hashem Zara, which was foreign worship of God, to Malchut Yisrael, because Ahav now introduced Avodat Elohim Achirim, worship of actual foreign gods. And this was done for the first time ever, that Bnei Yisrael were now worshiping not only Hashem in a foreign way, but now they are worshiping foreign gods. How did Ahav succumb to worshiping full-fledged Avodah Zarah, pagan gods? Right? How is it that he transitions from Avodat Hashem Zarah to Avodat Elohim Achirim? There are two potential ways to understand how this could have happened. Firstly, it was likely due to his new wife, Izebel, who was a Tzidoni princess. Her father's name, Et Baal, attests to their ties to the god Baal, parallel to the way the Yud-Heh ending of many Jewish kings and Nevi'im's names attests to their ties to Hashem, such as Yirmiah, Yeshaya, etc. Et Baal, right, with the ending of his name is Baal, attests to his ties to the Baal. And as we will learn in the next several prakim, Izebel was a ruthless missionary for the Baal. She had 400 Nevi'i Baal and 450 Nevi'i Baal and 400 Nevi'i Asherah on her payroll. And she banned all Nevi'i Hashem in Malchut Yisrael. And if they were found there, she would murder them. She seems to have had no moral compass. She threatened to kill Eliyahu. She actually did kill a Nevi'i Hashem. She killed an innocent man named Navot, etc. But it's also important to keep in mind that unlike today's separation between church and state, where we have a very steep divide between religion and government, in the ancient Near East, politics and religion went hand in hand. When Bnei Yisrael made a political alliance with a foreign country, its cultural influences often permeated Bnei Yisrael society, especially since those countries were often wealthier and considered more sophisticated. It's kind of similar to the way in which Israel today has become receptive to American cultural norms and many aspects of its worldview due to their longstanding political alliance. This is what happened when Ahav cemented his alliance with Sidon by marrying their princess. Their alliance became not only a political one, but a spiritual one as well. And we have to keep in mind also that Baal was particularly alluring to Bnei Yisrael because Eretz Yisrael was a land that had no rivers or natural irrigation. And their primarily agricultural society was therefore completely dependent on rain for its survival. Baal promised an alternate route other than Hashem to guarantee rainfall and thus towards economic stability. This was very alluring for Bnei Yisrael because they felt that they could daven to Hashem to get rain. And if that didn't work, then davening to the Baal might get them rain also. The parak then ends with a strange and seemingly unrelated story about a man named Chiel who built up Yericho and lost his two sons in doing so. This was an exact fulfillment of Yoshua's curse in Yoshua Perek Vav Pasachav Vav, in which Yoshua cursed anyone who would build up Yericho, in that his eldest son would be killed when he laid its foundations, and his youngest son would be killed when he laid its gates. In fact, our Pasuk here quotes the exact language of this Pasuk from Sefer Yoshua in describing what happened to Chiel. But what does this story have to do with the description of Ahav's reign? Yes, of course, it took place during his reign, but why does it even deserve mention at all? According to the Pshat, Chiel's rebuilding of Yericho symbolizes the complete absence of national values and a lack of appreciation of their historic and miraculous conquest of Eretz Yisrael that permeated society, unfortunately, during Ahav's reign. This would be comparable to an American who would want to build an apartment complex upon the field of Gettysburg. This demonstrates how pervasive the damage of Ahav's Avodah Zarah was. It removed any sense of pride the people may have had in their Jewish heritage, including the desecration of important sites that should have been infused with deep meaning and reminders of Hashem's presence in their lives. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, notes the smichut parshiot, the connection between the texts between this story here about Chiel, which concludes Perek Tet Zayin, and the introduction of Eliyahu HaNavi in the first pasuk of Perek Yud Zayin. The Gemara explains that Eliyahu and Achav were both being Menachem Avel Chiel at the same time, and that at the Shiva house, Achav taunted Eliyahu that Chiel's son's deaths must not have been the result of Yoshua's curse, since Moshe's curses against those who worship Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, that they wouldn't receive rain from Hashem, haven't come true. All of Bnei Yisrael worshipped Avodah Zarah at the time, and yet the rain hadn't stopped. There hasn't been any correlation between lack of faith and national misfortune, claims Achav. Immediately, Eliyahu responded, as we'll see soon in Perek Yizayin Pasuk Aleph, that there would be a drought until he says that it would stop, in order to attempt to teach Achav an important lesson about Hashem's existence and involvement in Bnei Yisrael's lives. We'll continue learning about this in the next Perek. Thank you for studying together. Li'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.